I love myself a good like cyclical depressing
Oh,
story.
you love your cyclical
I
stuff.
love my cyclical
Neuromancer,
words.
Wheel of Time.
Yep.
What else is cyclical?
In
Your
many
Love
ways,
Life.
thanks. Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tutor Round podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today we're talking about Mark Lawrence's first book of fairly new-ish series, The Book That Wouldn't Burn.
A part of the Library trilogy. And you, does that name that you said, was that Mark Lawrence?
That's the Mark Lawrence.
That's,
the legendary.
That son of a bitch. That Mark is somewhere out there on the interwebs. We reached out to him. We wanted to talk to him. We wanted to have him on. And the audacity for a man
to
who has
another life to
with
care.
Children and a PhD, and he's an author, and he didn't have time for us.
We understand.
Yeah, completely understand. It was so cool because I love when an author, we actually reached out to him way earlier about, hey, could we ever have you on? And he didn't even ignore us. He just said, hey, it doesn't seem like you guys have read most of my books. I'd love to have a deeper discussion, but, you know, I want to go on with people who have more, you know, have read more of my
actually
stuff.
Actually read my books.
And I respected the hell
Fair
that
enough.
he said no, mm-hmm. and exactly why I went, respect. And now we're here reading one at a time, so eventually we could be like, hey Mark, we read all your books, come on. But this book is the first in a newer series. He has other books like Red Sister,
yep.
and
Book of the Ancestors book, yep. the series.
This one, book two comes out, it might be out by the time this video is out, but this mm-hmm. is book one, and I would say we're going to keep the spoiler free as always for the first 10 to 15 minutes, then get deep into spoilers. Keeping it spoiler-free for people who might be curious into a book like this, Rich, would you agree with this statement that The Book That Wouldn't Burn is basically a meta way he found out, you know what, let me completely meta game the book industry. I will write a book about books and librarians for people that if you're reading this book, of course you're going to like books. So he has a captive audience of people who are book readers reading a book about books in a library.
Basically,
to people
yeah.
who have read that made no sense.
Lovers,
make that make sense, Rich.
Basically, if you're a fan of reading in general, you imagine this. Put yourself in this scenario that you go into a library, you go into a place surrounded by books, and you love to just sit, and that feeling of being surrounded by yeah. the books makes it comfortable feeling for you. You feel warm, cozy at home. Mark Lawrence does a sufficient job of being able to put that warm, cozy feeling in literary form. Like it says, now it goes beyond the warm and cozy and goes to warm and toasty of like, there's some spooky nature here, but I digress. It's still a lot of fun. Also, if you're a fan of Mark Lawrence's work, Mark Lawrence has an interesting range of like, kind of the grimmest of grimdark to just regular dark-ish fantasy, dark themes fantasy with your Book of the Ancestor. This is probably his lightest fantasy book where it's not grimdark at all, far more hopeful message, maybe some darker elements and themes, but it's not a forefront in your face. So
right.
definitely approachable to a wider audience, I think.
This could even be, I would say, teenage, even younger. It's PG-esque. There's
yeah,
typical action stuff. It's very accessible to pretty much every reader that's yeah. going to be into fantasy, whereas the other stuff Mark Lawrence writes, way, way off the deep end as far as grimdark.
Prince of Thorns is not, it's not for the YA. It's
yeah.
new.
This would not. Be for a wide, wide audience. But Rich, what do you specifically think about the book? And I know you're saying generally people who are more like that theme, like that coziness.
Mm-hmm.
Who would you recommend this to? What do you think about it? Spoiler free.
Well, of course, if you're a big fan of Mark Lawrence's other works, you will probably like this as well. Decent spot to jump in. I wouldn't, if you're reading Mark Lawrence's rest of his work, there's a ton of action normally. This one does not have that type of action. This is more of a mystery. This is a mystery novel. You're there to find out secrets about the world, and you're there for the further discovery, the character journey of what the character's going to find out.
Yeah.
That's what you're here for. So don't expect your Red Sister epic fighting nuns moment. Just forewarning.
You wouldn't say, go rush out to read this right now. What would you? No, what would your rating be for the book?
My Rambler rating would be accepted. If on the list of things of the highest being a must read right now, then below that recommended, then it'd be a accepted, mixed, then rejected. I'd say this is accepted. Like, it's definitely, if you already have this on your TBR, go ahead and read it. I think it's good.
I lean more into the mixed territory for this mm-hmm. book. And the reason I say that, the one summary I could say for this book is I think this would work way better as a novella than a full book. So some of the messages here hit, and it was interesting to think about, but I think it dragged on a bit. Okay. And I wasn't as attached to the characters. It was interesting enough. I don't hate the book, and I'm not fawning over the book. I think we'll have a cool discussion on some of the messages and themes more so than just the characters and plot. I don't think anybody out there, you're going to fall in love with these characters. I think it's fair to say that because we had this as one of our patron book clubs of the month. This was the book that wouldn't burn was one of the ones we discussed with all the patrons. And for the most part, they were also mixed as well. And the ones that did like it, liked it like you did. They liked it enough. And so if we were going to recommend something, I'm sure we'll read other Mark Lawrence stuff mm-hmm. that will very much recommend more than this. And I know that's yeah. not the best for, hey, you're coming onto this video going, maybe I'll read this eventually. That will be honest with our review, yeah. even though you do like the book more than me, probably.
I think people would be here for the interesting discussion on the nature of knowledge versus wisdom. And why, like, that's kind of what this book gets into.
Interesting stuff, yeah.
Is the whole adage of, is ignorance bliss? Is it actually true? It can, a lot of themes, this whole book kind of relates to a lot of the age that we live in, the age of the internet, confirmation bias. People, do you pursue truth or do you pursue just to confirm your own biases? A bunch of interesting stuff to talk about.
Yeah, so if that's up your alley and you want to think a little bit more and get a cozy feeling, I'm sure this book won't disappoint you in yeah. that way. You're not going to get any super exciting moments, but it is a book with something to say. And Mark Lawrence is a great writer. He's written other great books too. He knows what he's mm-hmm. doing. Very confident.
Yeah.
This video is brought to you by Storyverse.
Storyverse is a new app which combines original short stories with professional animation, all in a TikTok-style feed. So if you're tired of kind of watching stupid people doing stupid crap on stupid platform of TikTok, actually spend your time reading short stories accompanied with really cool animation.
They spend 8 to 10 minutes, and these are made by professional animators. You literally scroll it like you're on Tinder, going left or right. You keep swiping away to the story you want to read, and the animations are done actual professional animators who have done real books and real things and real stories. And
it's
then
also really cool, interesting styles. If you're a big fan of webtoons and you want a little bit more actual writing, and you want a bit more of, instead of just still panels, you want animation, this takes it to the next level.
Go ahead and check out Storyverse on your app store, anywhere online. It's awesome.
Thanks, Storyverse, for sponsoring us.
So do you want to get in a little bit for the five categories? You want to go right into it? I mean, what else do we have to discuss?
Yeah, let's go right into it.
Okay, six categories. That's right. Now, what would you say for...
Oh, spoiler warning, by the way.
Yes.
Full spoilers.
Spoilers right here, right now. We're going into The Book That Wouldn't Burn. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. So of the first two categories we got, emotional impact and thought-provokingness, what did you rate each of those categories? And we'll talk about each.
Sure. I gave the thought-provokingness a 4, so I thought it was great. The emotional impact, I gave it a 3.5. I thought it was good. What did you give it?
I gave thought-provokingness, and to clarify for viewers here, that means we're talking about messages and themes, how much it sits with you. Does it have something to say? I gave that a 3.5. I thought it was good. And for the emotional impact, how invested I was in the story, I gave a 2.5.
Okay.
And so I said it was more disappointing. So emotionally, I was disappointed, but thought-provokingness, I thought it was good and had some stuff to say. And I want to start with the messages and themes here.
Yeah,
I think that's more interesting conversation.
So I think there's a couple here. Which one do you want to tackle first? Because overarching themes, there's the two big ones is the one on basically different people's being able to get past their differences. The idea of communication and the barrier of language, understanding that you can actually come across people from a completely different culture and actually understand them and come to see you have more in common than you have differences. There's that, and it's the romance aspect of this book.
Yeah.
And then there's the other one of knowledge versus wisdom, of just because you have a lot of knowledge, just because you know a lot of things, doesn't mean you're particularly wise to use them.
That's what I think about you.
Thanks.
You know a lot of things.
I went the opposite route. I think I'm very wise for how little I know.
you exaggerate everything that you know. Yeah, that's fair.
No.
You can take it either way.
I sound a lot more intelligent than I am. I know, like...
You really stretch that word count.
Oh, yeah. No. I fake it a lot, and I get by. It's fine.
Well, something that we're both guilty of, most humans are guilty of, is that whole... the discussion of knowledge in this book and confirmation bias. And you hinted that in the spoiler-free, where in this endless... library of all knowledge ever, anything can exist. The king and the societies in here use it only to show things that they want to hear and want to spread. So they'll use it as a tool. If you can get anything, you could hear any opinion, you could hear any side, but you're just going to go find the book, the article online, whatever it might be, and pull that out and use that to show, see, I'm right. Or, see, here's the thing that is true.
It goes into my frustration with just how studies are used in regular conversation. It has bothered me. We've talked about this with Bookborn. I'm not entirely against studies in and of themselves and scientific research. I'm mostly against how people use them in conversation. And even if I have read a study, I just generally find it's pointless to bring in conversation, because what do people do? They just go, they look up like, what proof that... I don't know.
Prove that you're dumb and I'm smart.
Prove that you're dumb, I'm smart. First article online, read the headline, the headline. It confirms my bias. Throw it at the person's face like, see, I got a study that says I'm right. Pointless. It's
kind of what we do. You viewing right now, viewer out there, pick a name. Who are we talking to directly?
Steven.
There's got to be plenty of those out there.
No, Steven knows who I'm talking about.
So,
you may think I'm talking about a different Steven. No.
It's you. So Steven and other people out there, they're watching this video. Maybe they read this book or any of the books that we've ever read and reviewed, and they go on BookTube. They search up, what do these YouTubers... I noticed I didn't say favorite BookTubers or YouTubers. We're not up there yet for some people. What do these two Kremlins think? Or what does anybody else think? They'll go to Bookborn for someone that actually is knowledgeable about stuff. They'll go to some other different conversations. Maybe they come here for different reasons. And they'll see, I read that book. I loved that book. Or I hated that book. I want to see these people I like gush about it or hate on it. Yeah. And a lot of people will just seek out reviews that agree with them and confirm their own biases. Of course, when I finish a book, I like to see I'll go to Goodreads, I'll go to something of, man, who else? Am I crazy? Am I the only one that hates this? Am I the only one that loves this? And then want to see other people that agree with you to help you go, okay, I'm not crazy. Or just to see, okay, you had that feeling. I want other people to also feel the way I feel. And especially, that's just book opinions. When it gets deeper into philosophical or entrenched beliefs and you believe it down to your core, you're not going to be confronted with something that you dislike as much. Hey, we can be aware of that and try to be unbiased as we can, but it's human nature. So we can try to objectively look and go, what is my actual opinion? Let me confront this with things that are opposing to what I think and then change from there. But this whole book's exploring, deeply held entrenched beliefs, something that is down to your core. You're going to be even more antagonistic to change. As much as, again, we're talking about these two categories with emotional impact as far as the story goes and how invested I was, not so much. Thought-provokingness had something good to say. And the reason I said earlier about this being a perfect novella is it has a good message. And I think a novella would have been perfect to get a message like this across in a more impactful way for me, too. And I would have thought about it more, kind of like your Piranesi's, where if Piranesi was a longer book, wouldn't have stuck with me as much.
Sure.
Piranesi had more than that. I was like, you could have gotten that shorter. This is a really great message. But then I think the length of time it gets to say that was my complaint about the emotional side, but it does have something good to say and makes you think. On your side, you both thought it was, you know, you were pretty invested and thought-provoking. Could you touch into...
Sure.
Because we agree on the message
here. I disagree on the length of the book. I don't think there was much to cut, so I wouldn't want it less. I don't think it would be a good novella. I like the length of the novel.
Yeah.
However, I will say what soured a little bit of my enjoyment was the end of this feeling like it's a setup book completely. And that
soured a bit of it for you.
Yeah. A little bit of it wasn't its own complete thing. And you're right. It could have been, it very well could have been a just standalone novel very easily. And then it kind of felt like the last 2-3 chapters. Okay. This is a series.
Yeah.
So it's a little...
It's also very strange. This is going to be a trilogy, the library trilogy. Very much feel like this is... I know he wants to maybe explore these characters more, get more into it. He probably has more world-building aspects to show us and a plot line mm-hmm. to go through. Of course, he planned this. But it really is something that I wish was a standalone that I could think about and let that message stick with me. That would have been much cooler than going, oh, it's... Now I'm thinking action, fantasy going on with these characters and that's, again, I was less interested in the characters.
Yeah.
Do you want to jump? I don't want to jump in because I didn't give you too much time to talk about why you like it more than that, or something about the message that rung more true to you other than the confirmation bias. Is there something else layered there?
Sure. I mean, it's not just the confirmation bias. And of course, all of this we're talking about, to give context, the library in this book, in this world, is an infinite library, has every book that ever has been written or ever will be written mm-hmm. is in this library. Now, can people find the book that you're looking for? No, it's not easily accessible. So it takes a lot of time to actually go out and index things and try and find the books. But that's kind of a part of the internet as well. Like, all infinite knowledge, but like, which one's true? We kind of have like large swaths of information that it's hard to actually index. And we have a little bit
Google
easier.
Helps us a little bit.
Helps us a little bit, but
and
then ultimately...
In this world, it's the... What are they called? The assistants.
The assistants.
Or your Google.
Yeah, they got it, but it's not the same. Like, we have it easier with Google, and in all honesty, a little bit more condemnation on us that we have the entire... All of Earth's history... And all of Earth's knowledge at our fingertips. And what is Steve doing right now? He's watching a book. He's watching a podcast on a fantasy novel instead of learning about the great literature of Earth, instead of learning about Marcus Aurelius, instead of learning about Napoleon Bonaparte, Madame Curie, any historical figure of importance. Nah, let's talk about fantasy world books with two lame-o YouTubers. That is kind of the essence of, wow, we are wasting what we have. The internet is the biggest gift and we crap on it all the time.
Well, you see, I like books, though.
I know, but that's... all of Earth's knowledge.
Wait, Rich, I'm going to disagree with I'm going to disagree on one thing, though. There's like 90% of the internet, other than this BookTube thing we're doing, is there's 90% of the things out there are worse than viewing this on YouTube. I think for the most part, everybody viewing this, you're on the top 10% of the internet right now as far
as... But don't feel happy about that.
No.
90%'s awful. 10%'s not great.
We're still upper echelon, okay, of the things they could be doing on the internet.
On the internet?
Think about it. The internet's a big scary place.
It's a big scary place.
Oh, boy. So at least they're here cozying up little library.
Also, I was falling into the trap of one of the libraries in the book. Are they in this world, in the culture, where they actually look down on heavily fiction books.
Yeah.
Because they have like this world of knowledge and they're constantly trying to develop their technology. It's like going, why the hell would I waste a single second of my time reading fiction?
Right. And Mark Lawrence has a point to say in this book, one of the messages is that fiction's important.
Yeah.
And he is essentially saying that you can sometimes find more truth in fiction than nonfiction, which of course, us fiction readers. Again, when I'm saying he meted this, Mark, I so agree. Like, I'm like, yes, fiction is it. Oh my goodness. He's writing this to people who will get confirmation bias out of his own book.
100%.
Because he's giving this to readers who are already going to agree and be confirmed in their biases that fiction's great.
Yeah.
Ooh. Nice job, Mark. Oh my goodness. That's great.
It is.
That is great.
What do you think about the romance aspect of it? And this will bleed into characters, but I think overall the idea of, I think it's a message we've seen before of peoples from different cultures and drastically different backgrounds find that they actually have more in common than they have differences.
Yeah.
And so what did you think of that aspect and how that message was told in this story?
I will say I was more neutral on that, but I want to back up with one thing and say that made me think, that whole plot point about enemies realizing they have more in common than against each other, that this book could never be adapted, ever, because the whole reveal...
Oh, yeah.
The reveal is the fact that you don't know exactly what they look like, so that the reveal can be, hey, they're actually the enemies.
From Levere's point of view, you know the Sabers are...
Ivar, I think is his name. Ivar. Yeah,
but the Sabers are the enemy.
Yep.
And then you look... And you know Leveria they're not... Levere
also says Sabers are the enemy.
Exactly.
Turns out...
So you think they're both humans, and actually... What a twist!
Yeah.
You know, Ivar is actually one of... Laveria's Saber.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You got
there
it.
We go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm figuring it out.
the thought provoking part of this book with the confirmation bias in the library, all that great. The romance stuff and the enemies, I think it was fine. It didn't enthrall me. And I think a lot of that will go into character talk, but you brought it up. Did you think that the romance and that message was anything that super connected with you?
Well, this kind of goes into my character rating. I gave it a 2.5, ultimately just kind of disappointing.
Okay, 2.5 stars out of 5.
Yeah.
And I gave it, just to put mine up there, is also 2.5 stars. So we exactly agree that it was more on the disappointing side.
I don't think that they're particularly flawed. It's not that they're bad particularly. It's just wanted a bit more out of Ivar.
Would you agree
not
that
enough for me.
Ivar's more, and not as just a derogatory, I don't mean this just negative, it's just a fact that he's more one note, and Laveria is his purpose. And hey, there could be one note characters, it's just maybe that one note character didn't get you as much as other one note characters.
Yeah, I can understand on a certain level that because Ivar was isolated and due to his trauma, basically his whole life is surrounded by filling the hole in his soul that is Laveria.
Yeah. So he kind of has to be one note.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But definitely not as, I'm not as interested in the characters as I am in the plot mystery aspect of it.
Gotcha.
That's what carried me through. It's not necessarily what the characters were going through.
Okay.
So.
What'd you think about Laveria's character?
I was... Very early on in the beginning, I really liked her. I'd like the spunk, her just saying, like, you know, jumping right into the monster's mouth to save the soldier. Just that little angry, spiteful devil. Cute. I enjoy that type of character.
You know who she reminded me of a little bit? Lilo. From Lilo and Stitch. A little bit of that spunk at the start.
A little
bit
of that spunk.
Remember that first scene in Lilo and Stitch where she just beats up the little girl? She's like, just... Whack, whack. Oh, anybody that's seen Lilo and Stitch, it's just a great opening scene to Lilo's character. It's so
fun. One of
fun.
The best scenes of just like this blank stare.
And then just wails on her. Like, that's our spirit animal, our spirit person right there.
Yeah, I love it. But yeah, you're right. It does kind of remind me of Lilo. But I like her a lot in the beginning. And as time went on, I liked her, but I didn't see... For the amount of time that we had with her, I thought I would be more connected to her story and her change over time. Like, it seemed like she was supposed to be learning the lesson of, like, ultimately she was chosen by that head librarian because she was able to speak the Saber's language. So he thought, oh, maybe she will be able to overcome her hate. Turns out, for most of it, she isn't. She still hates the Saber's. But then by the end, she does overcome it. So overall, I get the story that she's going through. I just wasn't as connected to it. So
yeah, there's
ultimately kind of disappointed me.
It was a very much not super inconsistent, but I guess didn't see the full picture. Mm-hmm. And maybe you'd agree with me on Laviria's character at first. Of course, and she's a duster. She's in the dust, and the Sabers come and attack her family and her society there. But at first, she has a reaction of more curiosity, of learns the Sabers' language, and I don't see the extreme hate early on. And yeah, go ahead.
Very early on in the beginning, she doesn't learn the Sabers' language. She just remembers the one phrase.
Has this desire to learn it? Is that more accurate?
Mainly because she wants to kill them. She's angry at them. It's like, I want to learn everything I can about them to bring them down.
Gotcha.
I think that's how it started, librarian thought something else.
Yeah, I read a little differently where I didn't see that much hate from her. Maybe...
No, there's not.
What I'm trying to read into Laviria's character is this thing happened to her, but the thought that comes into my mind about Laviria isn't hate. It's curiosity. And I think if she was a little bit more, if that hate was more apparent and she made decisions that were just, and then to the end, that's how she, because her point is overcoming that with the enemy. Mm-hmm. And she didn't strike me as the most hateful person.
Maybe that's Mark would respond to you. It's like, hey, with Ira, you're saying he's one note. With Laviria, she has multiple things going on. She isn't just hateful. She isn't one note. Yeah. She is mostly curious, but she has this ball of hate past trauma and all these other little things that go around with her. She isn't a one note character, little ball of hate. What would you say to that?
Oh, I'll say
Austin.
You know what?
Answer Mark Lawrence.
Mark, listen, first off, please still come on. That's well, when I mentioned Ivar saying one note, again, I said that wasn't negative connotation or derogatory. It's like looking at the character for what they are and what they're going for. And for Ivar's, that's his thing. For that purpose, there's other characters that also have one purpose, and it works because it fits perfectly with the plot, or there's other reasons that make it impactful. With Laviria, being one or two note, it's not, again, I don't use that as a negative thing. I'm just trying to look at more of the consistency of the character and mm-hmm. see if this is someone that makes sense for the message being said. This is somebody that I'm getting connected to, and for the time we spent with Laviria, that hate kind of being I didn't see her as super hateful when the point is to overcome that. Yes, mm-hmm. it's there, but not as apparent enough to go like, oh, it makes sense that she has to be the one to tell this story. I kind of went in my head, there's other characters that could have told this story if that's the message and that's what could have been said. So it's, yeah, it has nothing to do with that note. You agree with that?
Ultimately, yeah. Seems sort of replaceable. I've seen these type of characters before.
Yeah.
And with that whole plot line, it's a little bit confusing on why her particular, like,
why her,
it's,
right?
Why her? It's that rage against the Sabers you don't fully see, and you think with her curious mind, why wouldn't she be more curious to look into this and question some of this stuff?
Yeah, her character set up so curious that I would think, oh, her message of the story would be different than that. Her learning so much, maybe it could be a message about she learns so much and gets her confirmation bias so bad, and really emphasizing the fact that you think you know so much.
Yeah,
into that.
Maybe a change that would kind of go along with the message that Mark's trying to go is showing her study and learn about the Sabers particularly,
mm-hmm.
and studying and researching them, but basically confirming her own biases down that route. Yes,
exactly,
she's very
saying,
curious,
yeah.
But
she thinks she knows so much because she's becoming more knowledgeable. But the whole point is you think you're knowing more, but you're really not that wise.
And then it's the revelation moment
of
most of my research was incredibly biased in what I was learning. I clearly know next to nothing about them.
Yeah, when you thought you knew everything, because that would have been perfect for her character, but didn't really go that direction. She mm-hmm. didn't go super into it. So not a bad character, just... a little disappointing in that respect. I think some of the side characters, well, you have Ute, you know who the best characters were?
Hmm.
The pets, the animals.
The cows. Oh, the bird. I love the robot bird. Robot library
and
bird.
Doggy, best boy.
Best boy, best ball of darkness.
Do you want to get into many of the other characters or just talk about something that was worth mentioning to you?
For all the side characters, I think they were fine. There's not much else to say about them. Other than I kind of liked seeing the side characters grow up with Laveria through the large jumps in time. There was the moment of when Laveria goes from a young girl to a young adult, and you see just the moments of time with one of her friends of just like, she knows that he has a crush on her, and there's like two of them, and just, it wasn't that it was like, oh, what a great romance. Just like, it was nice to see the interesting passage of time and how that interacted of like how Laveria has grown up and changed. And I thought this mostly goes to Mark Lawrence being a very good writer.
Oh yeah.
That in the span, you know, one page to the next, Laveria is now what, 6-7 years older.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, there's two time jumps, right? Yeah.
Two big time jumps. And you really do feel how much, he does just enough that you really see how much she's aged and how much she's grown and all the little details that we did not get to experience and see with her.
Sure. Yeah.
I liked the writing aspect. I didn't think it was like hammered in. A lot of worse writers would have had the time skip and like kind of info dumped onto you.
Yeah.
Where instead of giving an info dump on her life, it was more just her having an interesting introspective moment with a friend that she knows has a crush on her, but doesn't reciprocate and kind of feels sad about that. And
yeah.
That's a great way to show her growth.
Yeah, and then
to a young adult.
What would you say about the side characters on Ivar's side, where he had his three siblings, in quotes,
mm-hmm.
and they each had a personality based on a book?
Yeah, I thought it was...
That was cool, right?
It was cool, especially, hey, they're all one-note characters, but it works for them.
They're supposed to be. Yeah.
With the magic system and just how they're supposed to be, that they've been warped by these books that they've been sucked into and spent 10 years or more of their lives in. So
actually kind of,
they're kind of fun.
The message for me a little bit, you know, when you just finish a book that you love or watch mm-hmm. a movie that you love and that becomes your personality, thought me of that when I'm so embarrassed to admit this on camera. Forgive me. But you know, the Karate Kid?
Yeah.
The bad one.
The one with Will Smith?
Yeah. And Jackie Chan.
I like that.
You did too?
I did too.
Oh my God. I watched that. I was in my peak preteen teen mode when I watched that movie in theaters, however old I was young enough to be impressionable. And I was going like, that is literally me. And then I started doing karate moves I joined Taekwondo for like 10 years. That wasn't because of that movie. I'm exaggerating. But yeah. I watched that film. And then for the next several days, my personality was, I am literally a Kung Fu master. Like, oh, come yeah. at me. And so these characters, their personalities are, you read this book and it's part of the magic system. It's kind of cool how that works.
Hey, I'm in the middle of Sun Eater. I'm on book 3 right now, nearly done. And I gotta say,
I'm just saying
my personality is
changing.
I've become more dramatic. I feel like I feel a great need to read the classics and the arts and start studying my poetry. In a regular, normal conversation about lunch, I can pontificate on end about the greats of, you know, of Shakespeare of Earth and, you know,
of
Diomedes.
Diomedes is such a poetic name.
It's a good name. Someone asked me, like, hey, you mind passing the ketchup? He's like, I don't know, can you? Many things ask me of that. Socrates would ask it in a different way. I'm very disappointed in your knowledge.
Why would you in the
why
first
would
place?
You in the first
Yeah.
I feel more dramatic.
I totally see that. Things are starting to make sense.
I was going to say, because I had a feeling when I was walking out of the car even today after listening to the book.
Oh, don't spoil, though. Yeah, don't do that.
But
don't
do that to me. I was feeling hype.
Okay.
I was there. Yeah. I was feeling literally him. I'm just hatred.
This book it leaves us with that feeling of thoughtfulness and a bit of comfort. It doesn't. I didn't emotionally resonate with me a ton, but you finish this book and you kind of think, okay, neat. Neat.
Yeah.
That's the word that comes in
my
head.
There's enough to think about, and going into the next category for me of...
Into plots? Yes. What'd you give plot out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 3.5. I thought it was good. Especially because I was caught like some of the twists got me. I know they didn't get you. But
do I, let me just put my rating so we can. Yeah, go ahead. So mine is a 2 star out of 5. So this is our biggest difference. I think it's flawed. Mm-hmm. And continue with what you're saying. Just so we have reference.
Sure. And because the plot twist got me. It like ultimately I was like, that's a pretty well done plot for me.
Okay.
I was carried along through. I enjoyed the mystery aspect. I wanted to know more. And ultimately by the end, I was pretty satisfied with it. So ultimately, I think it was a good plot that carried me all the way through. So fair. Why did it not work for you? Why did you think it was flawed particularly?
Okay, so a couple fold. The first one being my general complaint of the novella thing, because I think there was a lot more than what was actually being said. And hey, if I enjoyed the characters and wanted to spend time with them, that critique would go away completely. Because that I couldn't imagine me going to Stormlight being like, oh, this needed to be shorter. No, because I want to spend every living second with them. So a part of me thinking it's bloated also has to do with me not caring so much about some of the arcs. Sure. So some of the bloat comes from character investment, but me looking at this going, hey, this is the message of the novel. I would have appreciated it if it was more succinct message. And this is much longer than his book two will be. I know book two is like 100 to 200 pages shorter than this, which makes me interested in going, maybe I'll like that more. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to jump out of my seat to read the second, but
I will actually be reading the second book. Neat. So, okay.
If you really enjoy it, let me know.
Like, is it a significant step up from book one? I'll let you know to read it.
Awesome. Because that whole twist we're talking about with... I don't think we're talking about the Savers twist, are we? Or is that the twist you were referring to? That's one of them. Because the one thing that didn't surprise me a ton was when Laveria saw the Savers and humans, or saw both of them together in this other timeline. Let me make sure I have that right. Because when we get in the world building, we're going to have to explain ourselves.
It's not another timeline. It was just, I think, the past.
Was it the past or was it a different world? I forget if it was a different world because I know you could either jump... Or
past, if you go into the future, that's where you get stuck.
Gotcha.
They could both go into...
Oh, no, I didn't know if it was a different world or their own past, you know what I mean? Was it their own past or was it a different library?
I believe
past?
It's their world, their timeline. World.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whichever it was, they saw the Savers, she saw the Savers in them, that they were all dead, and her first reaction to that was saying, oh my God... They killed us and themselves. That wasn't the exact quote. Take that with a grain of salt, but something along the lines of they're horrible. And for Laveria being this curious person and for supposed to just that thought, and again, that maybe that hatred is part of what came into this, but her curiosity and me as the reader going, wait, they're all dead next to each other. Wouldn't one explanation be that, you know, they lived in harmony, or is there a world where that happened? Just that was a seeded thing of what I was thinking, but Laveria wasn't thinking. So I was thinking plot wise, going like, oh, I think this is an explanation. But Laveria is supposed to be smarter than me is one of the things when a character is supposed to be written as curious and knowledgeable and smart and didn't have that thought, took me out of the plot a bit and went, oh, that didn't make as much sense. Now that would be very different for a different character who is supposed to be. Not as intelligent as you, or not supposed to surprise you, or I guess she was written that way where I expected her to think that through, and also that plot point didn't surprise me. So as far as my disappointment for why I thought the plot was a bit flawed was, one, I thought cutting down to more novella length, two, that surprise what Laveria was thinking, and three, I think the ending that you mentioned earlier with it not concluding but kind of leading off to a sequel and not having that compact end, as well as that final action-y library burning down. For some reason, the whole library burning and the intense, fast-paced thing at the end didn't really match with the rest of what I was promised in the book as much. I was kind of expecting more of a thought-provoking and also we're getting immersed in this interesting world. And then when it kind of reminded me a little bit of the movie Glass Onion. And there's a lot of reasons I didn't love Glass Onion.
Yeah.
Glass Onion is actually bad. But... looking at Glass Onion, the end there, not spoiling, it's very, very light on that. It's a movie about, it's a mystery. It's a murder mystery, just like the Knives Out is a murder mystery. Then Glass Onion is a murder mystery, then turns into like a CGI fest. And I'm just going, I just wanted a murder mystery. So I guess I didn't feel like I was given the payoff I was promised a bit with a book like this. So that's my critiques of it. But again, Oh, God, I said this. If Mark never watched, now he's never coming on. Now what do we do? Right? Okay, save this and say why you liked it so that he can tolerate us and so, come on one day.
To the scene of the Sabers and the humans being found at the same time.
Yeah.
And, like, all dead around each other. That, I didn't think that they were working together or they were living together. I think the way it was written, to me, I just kind of thought that they were on, how it was described, I thought, like, humans were on one level of the house. They went down further and found dead Sabers on another level. And I was like, oh.
I do just I, correct, thought, I like, do think they were on the same floors, though. As it was written. That's what I remember.
I just, the first thing that pictured in my head is they sent a bioweapon in, killed a bunch of people, and then they went in to double check and, like, you know.
Oh, geez. Yeah, okay.
To raid it after the weapon's gone off. And basically, it still killed them as well. And they thought they'd be fine. That's kind of where my brain first went to. Okay. And so I was like, so that's why the twist got me. And so I'll be honest, didn't. You know, Mark, you tricked me. You tricked me good. Other than that, so because plot points like that worked for me, I enjoyed the plot more than you. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were getting at the ending, I guess.
You agree with me on that point.
I agree with you on that point. It's maybe not as completely because I was down for most of part of it, but...
You see what I mean by the action-y end where it's didn't seem like that? Action-y book. I guess I felt like it was promised different. Maybe you'd like
the beginning. I mean, we're set up with Ivar and all the action with the escapes. And there is some action I think is promised in it.
Yeah, there's some
the fact
stuff.
That like all of Ivar's group is like very physically well trained. They're doing all these fighting, and then I feel like we are owed a little bit of battle and stuff like that. So
okay.
To that degree, I think we are owed. And also the looming tension of the battle coming forward of like, hey, look, Laveria's world and city is going to be ransacked and destroyed. Gotcha. We know that going forward. So I do think we were owed some action at the end. Sure. I really didn't like the ending line of like, let's go get your girl. Like, I know where she is. And it's like,
was that the end? Let's see.
It felt like
it says you should come to Ivar. Carol called back. I know where to find your girl.
Yeah, it felt like the
Spider-Verse 2,
or just like,
which is,
you know, same bat time, same bat channel. Just like, you know,
next week on the Hooter Ramble.
The story just like abruptly cut, so you will read the next one. So I don't enjoy that part as well.
That's fair. And your point about there being action hinted at the beginning, totally fair as well. I think maybe I'm looking into it as I've seen way better things of promised and payoff to action in a ton of books. And this is not the kind of book where I was looking for a thrilling action at the end.
Yeah.
It did not set it up in a way for me that went, that's what I'm looking for.
Now, hey, in our ending, to give the story credit, this will kind of go into our world building.
Okay, yeah.
It's important to... Yeah, like this is the whole story is talk about the mystery.
Yeah.
And we're going into the mystery of the library. Now, in the action scene of the end, I think we get a ton of information on what the library is and how it actually functions. We get to know way more about the assistants.
Want to talk world?
Let's talk world.
Let's do it then. What did you give world building out of 5 stars?
I gave it a 4 out of 5 stars. I thought it was great.
That was great.
Great awesome. World building.
I gave 3.5 out of 5. I thought it was good world building.
Mm-hmm.
So we're close on that. That 3.5 good, 4 meaning great.
Right. Yeah, I thought it definitely immersed me into this world. I loved the aspects of the library. All the little details were really fun. I just loved all the assistants, how the library is a compromise between wisdom and knowledge and these two gods. And
it's biblical. Great.
It's biblical. You go into... I love the callback or the... Again, there's a lot of references in this book.
Oh, we should have mentioned that in the plot, actually, but it's important here to a lot of the quotes and the epigraphs and the beat, which we can talk in prose, actually, but something that you're getting at, and I call you off, is the whole point that there's a lot of references to actual things in the world where if you get it and you have the knowledge of it, you'll be like, oh, that's a cool reference, Mark.
To give some, I think one of the easier ones to pick up on is the pools and portals in the exchange in this book, but it's effectively kind of purgatory type deal. It's a very clear reference to The Magician's Nephew, the prequel to The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I love that book. That's one of the earliest fantasy books I remember reading by myself.
Really?
I love that book. Awesome. And so I really quickly picked up on that.
Yeah.
And I liked that a lot.
Yeah.
I know there's a ton I missed of references. There's tons of references.
Just some of them. So from our Patreon, when we were discussing this book in our Patreon.
Go check out our Patreon. Give us money.
So there's a couple references where Merton Shire noticed a Guns N' Roses quote in one of the epigraphs, and Kendall noticed there was an epigraph by R.I. Perrin. You know who that is? You're not supposed to, because it's just initials for R.I.P.
Like, oh, yeah. Yes, she so did. Yeah, yeah.
You get what I mean when it could go over your head. He's like, went over my head. And yeah. I didn't even notice it. And then all of our patrons are pointing out, oh, what about this reference? I'm going, I'm just dumb. I don't, that's cool. Oh. There was one with, can I mention the one with Bookborn? And mm-hmm. Yeah, so Bookborn's husband, Zach Argyle. Yes. He's an author, and Mark Lawrence once reached out to Zach Argyle saying, you know, your name sounds very fantasy-esque if we just adjusted it a little bit. And so he had one of the epigraphs was written by Zachary Guile. Just put the Argyle portion so put Zach and then added the AR to his first name and made it sound more fantasy-esque as a little aside and note as a compliment. Yeah. So he put all these little nooks and crannies into it, which really has more to do with pros and worlds. Sorry to off track us. Get us back. Ground us in this world.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Well, I did want to say that this goes a little bit. I just want to get on this point of I listened to a lot of this book.
Oh, okay.
And I liked the audiobook. However, you will miss a lot of the references if you listen to it and you don't physically read it. It's something I've also noticed with Sun Eater recently. I'm doing alternate of both. I've mostly listened to it, they make a reference to the word demon. They say it in the audiobook, demon. In the book, it's actually written as daemon. That is a computer reference. I actually know that, but like looking at it. But in audiobook, I don't know. It's demon. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
I don't get it. And that happens so much. I'm like, man, do I have to actually just physically read it? Because there's so actually physically reading it, I'm getting all the references. And the audiobooks, all the references go past me.
Go over your head, yeah.
I think it's the same thing in this book.
That's the point.
I probably would have caught the R.I.P. reference.
I physically read it and I didn't catch it. So you, well, yeah.
I would have had a better chance.
Better odds than me.
Odds if I could actually read it physically with my eyes. So that's just a side thing. But as for the immersion of the world building, I love myself a good like cyclical depressing story.
You love your cyclical.
I love my cyclical
Neuromancer, words. Wheel of Time.
Yep.
What else is cyclical? Your love ways, life.
Thanks. Revolving door of sadness. A Fire Upon the Deep for me.
Oh, you know, I didn't get that cyclical as much, but I see what you mean.
I could say others, but you haven't read them, and that would be spoilers.
Oh, don't spoil it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so okay. I will hold off on
the Fire Upon the Deep.
I have others.
Just like I'm
chained to this guy. Oh, I can't say things.
Fire Upon the Deep is such like perfect world building. It's a 5-star world building, if anybody was wondering.
Yeah, it is.
You'd agree. Come on.
Oh,
come on. It is banging.
Now, would I recommend that book to everyone?
No. No. But would you recommend it to the sci-fi nerds? Yes. would you recommend it to Mark Lawrence?
Of course. Mark Lawrence has already read it.
He would eat that. Yeah,
he's already read that book. I guarantee.
Him and Werner Vinge are pen pals.
Oh, yeah. 100%. But like with Mark Lawrence, what I've always been impressed with his works is his world building has always just felt more real than others to me. I think it's with his scientific background, when he does a fantasy element, it's based in some measure of plausibility that it makes sense. I like how the exchange works of the time traveling aspect of it to me felt far more believable and real of just the hard rules and sets of it. Love, you can move forward in time on your timeline, but then you're stuck in that time. If you go back, you're as a ghost and you can't interact with things. But the exchange itself is time neutral, where things kind of are more manipulated And that's the one place where people from out of times can actually meet.
Right.
Why it's not really allowed for humans. Love that. All the different parallel timelines, and you can hop into those. Super cool. Love it. The nature of how the exchange works of some... The whole library has sections for humans and all these different creatures, and it's allowed access to certain things. Oh, my God. Just... The nature of the library itself is so well thought out that there's so many details of it's the big reason why I'm going to read the book too, is I want to know more about how this library began, how it will continue, why it exists, should it exist.
Yeah.
Love it.
So the world and the message is what got you with this book.
Mm-hmm.
And that, hey, that's all great. And the library was obviously the focal point of this. And you also get those snippets about the dusters and a little bit of, we don't get a lot about the society. You know that society's looking for confirmation bias. We meet the king at one point, but that's not the point of this year.
I mean, you're supposed to feel a little bit of, it's very small. Liveria's time and her society ultimately on the grand time scale is just one moment.
Yeah.
And it's happened before, it'll happen again. It's ultimately not important, and you're kind of supposed to make them
feel small.
It's
all about the library.
Yeah, so I get you're supposed to make them feel small and significant.
Yeah, this gave me world-building aspects that was reminiscent of Piranesi, though I love Piranesi's world-building significantly more. So if I was kind of looking at this, the library is great. That's a great part of the world-building here. Agree with how interesting it was. For some reason, being in the library wasn't as cool and fascinating as the setting. Where I just imagined endless halls and libraries. Setting was cool. The concepts were great. Setting was cool, I'd say. Whereas the Piranesi type, the concept was amazing. The setting was amazing. Like, everything floored me there.
You were in a constant state of awe and wonder with Piranesi's world, where in this one, once sufficiently in the library, you kind of felt like you got an understanding going on, and it's not as wow and surprising. It becomes part of it.
Also, the amount of time we spent in Piranesi as a novella versus this as a book, again, going back to my main point of this, of if it was a short time and I desired more time in the library. To me, you left wanting to learn more. I agree with you on learning more of the concepts, but I don't want to spend more time in the library, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like, okay, we're just going to go through more library stuff. Whereas the concepts, we'll learn more concepts. That'll be cool. So I guess that setting immersion was just, all right, we're here. Cool. And the cool stuff was going through Ivar and Liveria meeting, not as much as I didn't love their characters, but how time worked and how there was that hard rule and it made sense. It's very hard for a time travel concept it can a lot of times break itself. So when you see it done competently, it's always satisfying.
Sure. I mean, and I expect that out of Mark Lawrence.
We expect that out of you. You keep that up, Mark.
I have high expectations of Mark Lawrence.
Yeah.
And so he pulls through on the world building stuff for me.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to move on to the last category, prose?
Yeah, let's get into it. What did you give it?
I gave a 2.5 out of 5 stars, meaning it was more disappointing, which I will clarify. What do you think?
I'm giving it the same score of a 2.5, disappointing. And I think it's basically for the exact same reason.
Yep. I think we've talked lightly about this. What would you say it is?
There is some editing. Like this, I think the book needs another, a different editor, because there are...
Can I give the quote?
Go ahead.
I have it from Mark Lawrence, where in his Patreon, hey, go support Mark. He's a great writer. He has his own Patreon you could check out. And he said this. Someone asked him in his Discord why there were a lot of clarifying and repeating paragraphs where something would happen in the plot to Liveria, then several paragraphs later would re-explain what happened,
or like literally Ivar, next page type
and
deal.
Then re-explain and clarify, like, oh, this is what happened. And the reason he did that is Mark said, in quotes, "To be fair, it's super hard to judge. The book that wouldn't burn gets a lot of criticism for repetition, and that was all because the editor kept saying, 'I still don't understand this. Could you say it again, but more clearly?'" So his editor was telling him to repeat it because he didn't understand, or she didn't understand it. Could you repeat it more clearly? So Mark was going, okay, my editor's saying this, I'll make it more clear. Whereas he didn't have this originally, but the edit actually made it worse.
Yeah. It happened enough that I just... ultimately I'm kind of disappointed, especially with how much I love Mark Lawrence's writing in general. I love Book of the Ancestor. He's definitely up there, some of my favorite modern authors for prose, just because he's able to put you into a setting. He has great character voice on his other books.
But hey, when you're writing prose and we're writing prose, we're looking at something that's more irreplicable, as in the best prose ever, just unique author voice, incredible. And on the opposite side, your ones, your 0.5, your low, 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 it just distracts you and takes you out of it. And that
this
element
was distracting.
That an element was enough to distract you from the book where you went, oh my good, what's happening here? Is that correct?
Yeah, frequently enough that it happened. It wasn't just a couple moments. It was throughout the book, from even early on the beginning, going like, why is he saying this again? Like, I get it. They're dusters. Like, I understand. They're from the dust.
He was just
move on.
Yeah, he was confirming our biases.
Huh? Confirmations. But yeah, that carried on through the entire book, and so it was distracting to me.
Yeah, but well, let's also, as much as we're rating it on the lower end, still well written, and the epigraphs were really cool and had some neat lines. He quoted himself twice.
Isn't that a fun way of like you quote yourself in your own book? And yet it doesn't come across as arrogant.
Yeah.
That's cool. Impressive.
It was very impressive. Because that could easily, if you did that in your future book, I'm immediately going, look at this dog.
Look at his pompous ass.
Yeah. Oh, he definitely just finished reading book 3 and he's feeling very poetic and he felt like he could quote himself. And yeah. Because the epigraphs are very cool to read. He's very descriptive. Some people I saw said this was some of his best prose yet. Some people were saying it was more distracting with the repetition. So it's which one affected you more? You've read his other books. Would you say this compares to his others? If take away the distracting part of the repetition, how was the prose itself outside of that?
Outside of that, I still think Book of the Ancestors better.
Okay.
Mainly, I will get at character voice. I think the character voices in Book of the Ancestor were more distinct and clear. I don't need them to say who said what. They're just super clear to me. This one, not as much.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's just something different that I didn't get from this book that I got from his other works.
Yeah. Do you want me to leave us off with a quote from this book?
Leave us off with a quote.
Let me get you all nice and tidy here, okay? Mm-hmm. So Book of the Ancestor, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do whatever the top one is on Goodreads. Do you know how they have their quotes?
Not even working out of your favorite quote.
No.
Just leaving us off with the Goodreads quote.
This is what people say is the best quote of the book.
Fair enough.
A book is as dangerous as any journey you might take. The person who closes the back cover may not be the same one that opened the front one. Treat them with respect.
Bye, everyone.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.